I felt very confident if we continued, we're getting things under control. But in the last 3 days, we had, if I count them right, 11 positives in the program. It just didn't feel as though we had our arms around it and had things controlled as I thought we needed. And, you know, again, keeping your priorities in order, the health and safety of our student athletes and staff is top priority.
There you go. Wisconsin missed out on another football game. No bye weeks in the Big Ten, so Wisconsin's just out of luck. There's two games off their schedule, just like that, because of COVID-19. That's Barry Alvarez telling us about what's taking place there in Wisconsin. He's athletic director. 11 new cases in regards to the team. And, of course, the coach was infected with COVID-19 and the backup quarterback here recently. That's why they didn't play against Nebraska. And now their game against Purdue this Saturday is going to be canceled. So the school reports 27 active cases among 15 athletes and 12 staff members since October the 24th. And they can't afford any more games to be canceled if they want to remain eligible for the Big Ten title. So it's unfortunate for Wisconsin, certainly, who looked really good in their first game of the year and then didn't play last week, not going to play this week. Wisconsin-Purdue has been canceled due to COVID-19. All right. Well, let's see here. League volleyball, Dusty.
Yeah, All-League Northern Plains League has been released, and you can find the full list at ncastsports.com. First team picks, Bailey Cunningham and Peyton Hake of Lakeside, Lauren Dubert from St. John's Tipton, Rainey Raby from Thunder Ridge, Kelly Kenobi and Caden Snondor from Sylvan Lucas. On the second team, Ella Wiles of St. John's Tipton, Madeline Davis from Thunder Ridge, Liz Klein of Sylvan Lucas, Reckon Obermiller from Lincoln, Shayla McMillan from Southern Cloud, and Josiah Field from Pike Valley. Then our third team selections from the area, Morgan Eberle and Colby Hennis of Lakeside, Ava Stoll and Callie Walters of Osborne, Cameron Risky from Thunder Ridge, Destiny Hammer from Pike Valley. Honorable mention selections were Lauren Brummett of Lakeside, Kerrigan Dunstan, Johnson Lemke from Rock Hills, Tori Slavic of Thunder Ridge, as well as Hannah Cool from Southern Cloud, Mallory Church of Tascket, Jillian Potterbaugh of Natoma, and Lindsay Winkleman of Chase. That's your whole team there. And if you missed, again, any of that, it's all posted at ncksports.com. You can go back and look at the NCAA All-League team that came out last week as well. It's all right at your fingertips there at the website, ncksports.com.
All right. Last week of locker room chats.
Yeah, tonight we'll talk to the head coaches of Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge. Here this evening on Katy Country 94, and those are also always online at katycountry94.com, and we post them later if you miss them while they're live at the podcast, the website. And then tomorrow night we'll talk with the head coaches of St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas to wrap up our 2020 high school football locker room chats. And then we're looking forward to more playoff football coverage on Friday night as we have Beloit taking on Phillipsburg on Katy Country 94 and ncksports.com with the Beloit Trojan Channel. As that will have pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock. And then on Z96.3 Through the Lake and KittyCountry94.com coming up on Friday night, I'll have St. John's Tipton in Frankfort at O'Brien Field in Beloit. Same times, pregame 6:30 and kickoff at 7 Friday night, high school football playoffs.
All right. All the information available at NCKSports.com. Patrick Mahomes has been named AFC Offensive Player of the Week. Well, duh. So he gets that. The Chiefs did make a trade yesterday for the trade deadline in the NFL. There were no big deals made yesterday. The Dolphins traded for Kansas City Chiefs running back DeAndre Washington, who's carried the ball three times this year, and a conditional seventh-round pick in 2021 in exchange for a conditional sixth-rounder. So in essence, the Chiefs gave Washington to the Dolphins to move up a round in the draft in 2021 to the sixth round. So adds a little depth for the Dolphins. Chiefs are okay at running back, especially with the addition of Le'Veon Bell. So that's an update on where the Chiefs stand currently. Alex Gordon won his eighth gold glove, ties Frank White for the most in team history. That's a good way to go out, eight-time winner, and well-deserved. Gordo getting the gold glove. Nicky Lopez was a finalist at second base. He did not win. Cesar Hernandez of the Indians winning that. Here's what I really enjoy about Kansas City media, and I'm sure it's this way in every media market for the most part, is the homerism. Like, Nicky Lopez got robbed. He should have won a gold glove. Well, if it was up to you, every Royal would win a gold glove.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to be completely biased. And well, this number, it's kind of like politics in a way. Well, this number tells me this is the person who should be, or you can rationalize anything. Yeah, okay, so you say Nicky Lopez should get it. So if he got it, then I guarantee you the Cleveland Indian fans and media would say, well, but there's this number that shows that he was clearly better than Nicky Lopez, and he got robbed.
Mm-hmm.
It's like once you get to the three finalists, they're all deserving. And sometimes it can be a bit of a popularity vote, I think. But, you know, Lopez didn't win it. something to shoot for next year, not the end of the world. And I don't think he got robbed. Frank White got robbed of his ninth gold glove, which would have been a record second baseman. Harold Reynolds won it. That was a robbery there. They were just tired of giving it to Frank White. But now they don't have to worry about giving it to Alex Gordon anymore because he's retired. Alex Gordon with 8 gold gloves. Frank White also with 8, which should have easily been 9 in Royals history. So congratulations to Alex Gordon. Be interested to see what the Royals do this offseason. They have a low payroll. Would they maybe get a couple of notable free agents? I'm not saying, you know, top of the line, but maybe a couple of, maybe a veteran pitcher to go in that rotation to allow some of the younger guys to maybe develop in the minors if you have a full regular season, 162 games. Mm-hmm. Something to keep an eye out for the Royals and what they might do come this off season. What will the college basketball season look like? You know, we don't even know yet when KU's going to start because KU thinks they're going to play November 25th against Gonzaga. But right now on the schedule, it's Kentucky, December the 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So that even hasn't been set. That would be in Fort Myers against Gonzaga. And by the way, Kentucky, we don't even know how that game's going to be played yet for sure. So yeah. KU's basketball scheduled December the 1st. KU fans are out there going, thank goodness you're finally talking about basketball because football's just not good. Not good. That's an understatement. K-State would start their season November 25th against Drake in Manhattan. And then they would take on Colorado on the 27th of November. So we're only 3 weeks away. 3 weeks from today, K-State's supposed to start their basketball season on the men's side. And KU could be starting their season in 3 weeks as well. What do you think this college basketball season is going to look like? Because there's a lot of moving parts. As I just mentioned, there's no set date, per se, as to when this season's going to start. I mean, for K-State, there seems to be more of a set date. For KU, it could easily. We still don't have all that ironed out as to they were going to be in Orlando, and then that got changed, of course, with the issues with agreeing on COVID-19 protocols and testing with ESPN and those tournaments down there. So all right, what do we expect when it comes to college basketball? Are we kidding ourselves by trying to play non-conference games, and we should just focus on conference games and start the season after January 1? Is that what we should do? Or should we do what the ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC did in football? It's like, we'll start just a hair later, but pretty much on time. And we'll just get as much in as we can because there's no guarantee we're going to play in March anyway.
That's a tough question to answer, man.
That's why I have you on the show, to answer your tough questions.
Exactly. I expect a semblance of a conference season, but I don't know about all these games
early.
Mm-hmm. I just don't know if they're going to be able to get everybody coming in from different directions. Like, K-State's supposed to have 4 teams coming in for a tournament, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they, you know, made up because they weren't going to go to their tournament, their originally scheduled tournament. So I just don't know if, as we keep going on, if that's going to be able to be feasible. Like, mm-hmm. are they going to allow 3 other parts of the country? And I know some of them are right. I think Colorado's part of that at K-State. But it's like you're just inviting more in. And isn't that what kind of we're trying to get away from, right?
Right.
Is having the big tournaments. Or right. I mean, I know this is only 4 teams, like I said, but it's 3 teams coming in. But it's more than just one non-conference opponent making a quick trip, coming mm-hmm. in, getting out. I just don't know if you're going to be able to have those things. Now, maybe some of these non-con games that, you know, they deem are from low-impact areas of COVID, maybe they'll let them come in if it's just a one team.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know. I'm not real confident that all these non-con games are going to get played, though. I will say that.
I don't think anybody is.
No.
K-State women would start November 29th at home against Southern, by the way, if you're wondering about that. I'm going to go back to something that ties in with what we're discussing here is the way the Kansas State High School Activity Association handled something, and that's with state volleyball. And Todd and I had this conversation when we were going to the football game at Hayes the other day, is they limited state to 4 teams, but yet had a quarterfinal match on a Tuesday where teams from different parts of the state traveled all the way across the state to other places. How is that any better to prevent spread of COVID-19 than just having all 8 at that one site? I mean, Smith Center, if you don't know this, Smith Center had a bit of a scare in regards to Spearville. Wasn't that kid for Spearville? She tested positive.
Yeah.
So there was concern that Smith Center might not be able to compete at state down in Dodge City. Spearville from one different part of the state coming all the way up to Smith Center. And you had that in many situations. You know, Goodland and TMP, you know, they played each other. it happened all the way across the board in volleyball for the quarterfinal matchup. So was that really the better thing to do, was to, instead of having eight teams at a state tournament playing it in one day, like on a Friday or Saturday, and then having them go back, than it is to have Spearville come all the way to Smith Center and then bring something up here, or vice versa?
Yeah.
Once again, I'm not saying I have the right answer. I just don't know how much is gained by doing that. Like, I understand if you say, listen, we're just going to take, you know, sub-state winners. I don't know how you could have done it differently other than just stick with what you had before and just don't allow fans, I guess would have been one way. But it does seem to, when you look at it and look back on it, you got teams from whole different parts of the state. Some have hot spots more than others. And then you're having volleyball travel across the state to play one match on one night. And granted, they're not in town the whole day, but still, you're enclosed. And they talk about indoors versus outdoors. Mm-hmm. You know, did that really prevent something? Well, probably never. We have nothing to compare it to because we don't have, well, if we had eight, had eight teams there in Dodge City, whatever the case may be. But it is an interesting point of talk.
I think after seeing it, I think even what you brought up about the fan part of it might be just as much of a factor.
I agree.
Of having this, the one school go on Tuesday or having eight teams there.
Mm-hmm.
Because you probably would have, I mean, they limited fans regardless, but you would really have to limit even more, I think, per team to make it work out the right way, because there were four quadrants that were set up and everybody had to stay in the same spot the whole day.
Right.
Like, even if your team was playing over on the other court, you had to stay in your quadrant.
Mm-hmm.
You could not move from that area. And so I think that was probably just as much part of it of having that many players there, was so they could get as many fans as possible from each team to be able to support them without going over the limit of where they could sit, what they could do, and things like that. So,
right.
But, I mean, if you limit the fans even more, then I don't think it's going to be any more chance of transmission if all eight teams were there.
See, that's what I'm saying is, if you have eight teams, you got obviously four more teams that are at state. But if you're limiting fans, whereas if you have a quarterfinal in a smaller gym and you're not limiting fans.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you have just as many people. Just as many people in a small gym, more condensed, than you would have eight spread out in a big arena.
Yeah,
and you could have four in one session, and the other four come later if you wanted to do it that way. Pool play in the morning, the other pool in the afternoon. Yes, the ones that play in the morning have an advantage, more rested. If you continue it on a second day or continue it later in the evening, I get all that.
Mm-hmm.
But that is what it is. I mean, you know, big deal. You got to do what you got to do. But that's something I've thought about too.
Yeah, like I say, I don't know the right answer. I know I would have rather had eight teams there.
Me too.
Me too. If I'm being completely honest.
I just don't think what they did really made a big difference, and I think it made a big difference for 336 girls in state that didn't go to state. That would have normally had they made the quarters. Anyway, but the reason I bring that up is the same thing with college basketball. Like you just said, do you bring a team in from across the country to play – you know, play KU? You know, do you have somebody, well, even Creighton coming in? I know that's not across the country, but Creighton coming in to play KU. You know, or let's say you had Villanova coming all the way from the East Coast to come in and play KU. I just closed their schedule. Actually, I do still have it up here. Let me give an example here. Well, Tarleton State is from Texas. So they're going to come all the way up to Lawrence on December the 13th. Wouldn't it be better for there to be, some people may say, wouldn't it be better to just go ahead and have KU, Tarleton, Omaha, and Creighton all be together, and they just play at one site, and then and not have just one team coming to your particular town and have it condensed into a mini bubble. And that's the conversation that's being had right now in college basketball is, do we play these games in little mini bubbles? Do we go ahead and allow, you know, KU's talked about they're only going to allow 1,500 fans at Allen Fieldhouse. You talk about killing an atmosphere. That's one of the greatest places to go for sports. I don't even care if you're a KU fan or not. If you've never been to a KU basketball game, you need to go. Dusty's a big K-State fan. He's gone. He knows what I'm talking about. It's just a different aura. It's a different feel. It gives you goosebumps, the history, the tradition of the place. That's when it's packed. I mean, it helps when you go. I mean, you can still go in and it's not, you know, packed. But, and then the game itself, it's just, it gives you goosebumps. A little different when there's only 1,500 people that are going to be there.
Absolutely.
Obviously. So there's that, too, the fan limitations. You've got basketball in regards to junior high starting tomorrow night, I know, for Beloit. I don't know about other teams in the area, but probably so. There's going to be, I believe you only get so many tickets per per athlete. How do you divvy those up? And if you don't use them, you want to turn them back in, you know, so they can be used for other people. So there's a limit as to the attendance. And you're probably going to see that in high school as well, I would guess, once that starts in December. How are you going to handle wrestling? We talked about basketball. What about wrestling? I still have a hard time figuring out how wrestling works, you know, because you've got one-on-one and you're definitely not social distancing. And you're definitely within, you know, for 3 minutes, you're going hard, and then you take a short break, and then you got another period of 3 minutes. For basically 9 minutes, you go the whole match, right? 9 minutes of wrestling, I have that right?
In some matches, some of like the backside matches are going to only be like 2 minute periods.
2 minute periods, okay. Yeah. So you're talking 6, 9 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
You have
a
short break in between rounds, so you're back out against the same person. You know, you're grabbing each other's sweat, so forth and so on. But at the same time, basketball, you have 10 people on the floor, and in a half-court setting, you got guys banging against each other, posting up this and that, guarding each other for an extended period of time, or one guy guards the other guy all the time, and if he's playing good defense, he will violate social distancing protocol, obviously. Yeah. Hey, man, play good defense, but stay 6 feet away from that guy. But he's a good three-point shooter, coach. What am I supposed to do? Yeah. Here's a broom handle. Stick it really high and see if you can block it. I don't know how this is going to work for the winter sports season. Nobody has the answers, and I'm more optimistic about it at least getting something done than I was, say, a few months ago, because I didn't think we'd get this far in football. And by the way, let's shift to football for a moment. I know I'm jumping around. There's no guarantee we get to the state championship round of football.
No.
I mean, I talked to a coach yesterday that said, listen, until we arrive at the stadium, get ready for kickoff on Friday night for a playoff game, I'm not counting that we're going to play this game Friday night.
Yeah.
So... And that's the way it has to be almost every week. But
for sure.
Now even more so, because you're getting more and more cases popping up. 63 active cases in Cloud County alone. Okay, and that's not too far away from here. Mm-hmm. You know, Mitchell County, I think, has 7 now. Smith County now has 18 active cases. And we know what all happened up in the Norton area. And you've got, you know, Russell County has 25-some cases. And so you're seeing, obviously, cases going up. And you're seeing more people and kids being quarantined at some of these schools. And then eventually that will impact the extracurricular activities and sports, which some people may say listening to this, well, you know, it's about safety and health and, you know, be thankful for what you did get. And I think that's a really good point, because I'm going to just give you a hypothetical. Let's say you've got, I don't care who it is, it can be any matchup you have this Friday in high school football playoffs, and one team ends up forfeiting because of COVID-19, all right? Well, let's just go Dodge City. That just happened. Dodge City, by the way, do you know the local tie there? David Foster, the head coach of Dodge City, is from Beloit. Graduated in 1990, a Beloit High graduate.
Yep.
And he's done a good job at Dodge City. Dodge City, 4-5 on the season. We're going to play a number one team in the state, I believe it was Lawrence, on the road in the second round of the 6A playoffs. And they've had multiple cases within the team and the school. So because of safety reasons, mainly to protect Lawrence, they didn't want to spread this and move all the way. And here's an example of Dodge City going all the way to Lawrence across the state. And they've got a hot spot down there, apparently, or enough of a hot spot to say, listen, this is not safe. We're not going to spread it to Lawrence, which is respectful, and they're not going to play the game. So the first reaction, if you're a Dodge City fan, now granted, they're 4-5, and they probably wouldn't have beat Lawrence. Lawrence is undefeated. But let's say it was the other way around. Let's say Dodge City was 9-0, and they're supposed to play Lawrence, and Dodge City has to forfeit. Or let's go back a week. Valley Heights was 7-1, playing a team that was 0-5 or 1-5.
0-5.
0-5. Hadn't won a game all year. Valley Heights would have easily won that game. Trust me.
Oh,
And Valley Heights had to forfeit. So there's two ways of looking at this if you're a Valley Heights fan. And this can apply to a Beloit Trojan fan, St. John's Tipton Blue Jay fan, Sylvan Lucas fan, Smith Center fan. Those are the four teams still left in our area for football. There's two ways of looking at it. And this is the way you can approach life. You can approach it as half full or half empty. The glass is half full or the glass is half empty. For the negative people and the people that just tend to be a Debbie Downer, the reaction is going to be, this sucks. We were 7-1. We had to forfeit our game. This is a bunch of baloney, and I'm so mad at COVID-19. I hate the year 2020, and what a joke that a winless team moves on to the second round of the playoffs, right? That'd be the negative way of looking at it. You know what the positive way would be to look at it? Be thankful you played 8 games.
Yeah.
Valley Heights played 8 games and won 7. We could have very easily, Keisha, listen, go back to August.
Mm-hmm.
There was worries there wouldn't even be football at all.
Yeah.
Nothing. Not a single game. Even there was talk that maybe it would be like Colorado. We move it to the spring, which is no guarantee, and play 6 games and it'd be a smaller schedule. That's what Colorado's doing.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful. Like, for instance, if Beloit-Phillipsburg don't play Friday night, or St. John's-Tipton-Frankfort don't play, or Sylvan Lucas-Victoria don't play, or Smith Center doesn't play El Saline, and you don't play Friday, and one of our local teams has to forfeit, and God, I hope that nobody does. I hope neither team gets the benefit of a forfeit, and they don't have to play, and then you move on, because that's one less game to get to play, and there's no guarantee you're going to play the next round of the playoffs next week, just because you get a bye this week, because the other team had to forfeit due to COVID-19. Mm-hmm. You got to look and say, listen, I spoke to a couple of coaches before the season. You know what they both told me? I said, what do you think? What's going to happen? They both said they were confident that we're going to get some of the season in. They said, if we get 6 or 7 games in, one coach said 7, the other said told me 6. Said, if we get 6 or 7, I take the 2 combined, if we get 6 or 7 games in this year, we'll be doing great, and I'd be tickled to death. Mm-hmm. Well, here we are. Beloit's played 9. Senios Tipton's played 9. Sylvan Lucas played 9. Smith Center's played 8. If the season ends tomorrow, isn't that a win considering how badly this situation, how dire it looked back in August?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But that's not how people are going to...
We don't think that now because we've gotten so far
into it. We're spoiled now. Yeah, that, exactly. Now we got to the playoffs and we're saying, well, we've come this far. We got to finish it. Kind of like state basketball. And I get it. I do. I get it. Don't get me wrong. I get it. I love sports and I want to see this thing completed. At the same time, you have to understand the situation we have. And the other thing is, Keisha could have very easily, at the end of the regular season, said, that's it. Mm-hmm. We had our regular season. Most people got their 6, 7, 8 games in. Be happy with it. Let's cash out our winnings at the poker table, and let's just go ahead and move on and see what happens. And let's not take chances that we spread this thing across the state of Kansas with a whole bunch of football games in the playoffs. Keisha could have easily have done that. They could have. The board and everybody could have got together and said, let's reevaluate this. We got some surging spots in the state. We're going to have, a handful of teams going to have to forfeit anyway. Maybe it's just best if we call this. And to their credit, they haven't, and I'm glad they haven't. But we could easily have seen the plug pulled here recently. I talked to an administrator that said he thought that's what was going to happen, and it didn't, and he was pleasantly surprised. Mm-hmm. So once again, we're going to have to look at this in a different way because it is a different year. And it's a different time that we live in. And that is, we're going to have to appreciate as much as we can get. Because what do we do in this country? We get greedy. That's what we are. We're greedy. Our country, for the most part, people in our country, we're greedy. We're spoiled. Certain people. Okay, you know what I'm talking about. We live in, perhaps the greatest country in the world. Some people would argue, but I think we do. Appreciate what you got instead of complaining what you don't have. We say that at prayers at the table when we get together at dinner. One of the things that's said, we rotate in regards around the table as to saying a prayer before we eat. And one of the things that typically comes up is appreciate what you have, don't complain about what you don't have, or think of those that are less fortunate than you. So there are some states where they're not playing high school football. Mm-hmm. And the state of Kansas is lucky we played this much. Now, how about volleyball? They did finish their season. As much as you can complain, as I have, about having 8 teams at state instead of 4, they all got to play it out.
Unless they had to forfeit.
Clifton Clyde had to get in.
Yeah.
And,
there were some quarantines. Very good team had to forfeit, and
Trigo
had to forfeit out of that sub-state.
But they still got to play a lot of matches.
Played a lot of matches, and they got in. And again, it's, we can complain about the way it was set up, but they got through the entire season.
Right.
They got through everything.
We crowned
champions at the end. Mm-hmm. Cross country, crown champions at the end.
Yes.
Girls tennis, girls golf, crown champions at the end.
Mm-hmm.
This whole fall sports season, outside of football because we're still playing, has crown champions at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the goal, right?
Right.
Even if you might miss a tournament here or there, you might miss 2 weeks of volleyball like Osborne did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you might miss 3 weeks of football like Frankfort has.
Mm-hmm.
Other teams that are dealing with that.
Sure.
You're still playing and you're still fighting for champions. Let's talk to KCK. They didn't get to do anything this year. Never got to do anything this year.
Right.
Even with like Olathe and those schools saying, mm-hmm. We'll do it. Casey Turner, Casey Piper had to play every football game on the road mm-hmm. to be able to play this year because they were not going to let people come into their facilities and into their county and into their place.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, hey, we want to play. We're going to play every game on the road.
Mm-hmm.
KCK never got any of that opportunity. I don't think in volleyball, football, anything.
Yeah.
And so...
So who are we out here to complain if the plug is pulled tomorrow?
Yes.
Who are we to complain? Because look at what a lot of people would say. I'd trade that in a heartbeat.
They set up that whole thing where you could play a spring football season, right?
Right.
And the only teams that are dropped are KCK. They're not going to go play a spring football season against each other.
I doubt.
A round robin or something like that. It's like it didn't work out for them, and they're probably going to miss this entire chance at football this year. And I know, the KCK schools aren't always that great. They don't go very far in the playoffs and all that, but they didn't get a chance to do it. So be happy of the chances you did get to have and be happy that you've made it this far.
Exactly.
And again, we hope that we don't have to worry about it. We'll go all the way through a state championship in football as well and then deal with winter sports after that.
Absolutely. Well said. The preseason wrestling rankings have been released by the Kansas Wrestling Coaches Association. Class 3-2-1A, Hoxie number one, Beloit as a team is number two, Republic County is number three, and Southeast Saline is seven. So three teams, schools from the North Central Two Association in the top 10 preseason wrestling rankings at 3-2-1A. Gage Carlson, a junior in Minneapolis, fifth in the preseason rankings at 106. And at 113, Bentley Montgomery, a sophomore at Smith Center. At moving on here to 145, Tate Cato, a Beloit junior, ranked third. 152, Hunter Prohaska, defending state champion. At 152, he is ranked number one, senior from Beloit. At 160, Matt Rodriguez, a junior, Southeast Saline, number one. And at 182, Brendan Walker, a junior, ranked number one of Beloit. And Sterling Harp of Southeast, number one, a senior at 195. And Braden Burks, Beloit, a junior, ranked number five at 195 in the preseason rankings. And Trey Barrientos, senior for Sylvan Lucas, number one. No surprise there, at 285. So we'll get that posted as soon as we can to nckosports.com for all you wrestling fans out there, for you to look at the early rankings for wrestling, and we'll see how far we can go during the wrestling season as well. I mean, don't know how far we're going to be able to go. I mean, hope we can go quite a ways. I think we've gone further than some people thought when it comes to the fall sports, but winter might be a little bit more challenging. All right, time for our focus on K-State Athletics today, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. K-State football, we were hoping to have a guest here today, but I didn't hear back from the one I was trying to get. So we'll just proceed this way. And then we'll end the show with an election update, which has nothing to do with sports. Well, not for the most part, it doesn't. But, you know, we're all, if you're a sports fan, you still probably are interested in who the president will be in the next 4 years, I would think. If you're not, then, well, I guess, whatever. You can go put your hands in your fingers in your ears and go, blah, 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 or turn the station when I get to that. But I do want to update people on that because it is a fluid situation in regards to what's going to take place with the voting in our country. With the presidential election, and I've had people that have already told me they appreciate the updates here as much as we can give through the AP. So we will go through that coming up here at the end of the show. Dusty, K-State has some players that are transferring, that are entering the transfer portal. Matthew Pola, defensive tackle, Jonathan Alexander, a defensive back, and Thomas Grayson, a running back. Any surprises there or anything that K-State should be worried about? Just typical transfer portal stuff. And then I think you gave the number of how many kids are leaving the football
seven
program.
Now, seven now. Josh Youngblood's probably the most
the
notable
big one,
of all those.
Right.
Not real big surprises. Jonathan Alexander said yesterday that love was not lost on his end. It was lost on the other end, on K-State coaches end. And I'm like, love might be lost because you had COVID and then decided to opt out after you went through it, but then you're still traveling to road games to go watch the team play. And I'm like, does that, for me, that it looks weird to me if I'm a coach, right?
Yeah.
So this guy doesn't want to play because of the risk of COVID, which one he's already had.
Right.
So why is he traveling to road games?
Good point.
If he's worried about that. And I think that could be part of where the love was lost. Like, you're not scared to travel, but you're scared to play.
Sure.
And I think that, and Jonathan Alexander's the only one out of this group of three that's really ever done anything yet at K-State. You know, he played 11 games last year and had a fumble recovery and you know, did some good things as a JUCO transfer as a junior last year. But that's kind of the thing for me that kind of stands out is, like, I opted out, but he's out there celebrating with all the K-State players after their road win. I think it was it was at Oklahoma. There was a video of them at Oklahoma just celebrating, slapping hands, and just going crazy in street clothes in the stands. And I'm like, that's interesting.
Yes.
So that could be why the love was lost, if you're still traveling but you're not playing.
No, I agree with that.
So nothing else really stands out there. I think you're going to see more of this, too, because of scholarships aren't lost this year.
Right.
But scholarships are still coming in for next year.
Right.
So some guys that you're going to be like, oh, I wonder why they're leaving, could be that, too. It could be just an overabundance of scholarships that are not all available but should be available for everybody that wants one.
Right.
And it's not the case.
As for on the football field, K-State will play at 3 o'clock. You can watch that one on, I believe it's on Fox, as K-State will be hosting Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State coming off their first loss of the year, overtime loss to Texas, now 4-1 overall, 3-1 in the Big 12. K-State, of course, their first Big 12 loss as well. They're 4-2, 4-1 in the Big 12. And, you know, one thing about Oklahoma State is they do have some dynamic offensive weapons. You know, Spencer Sanders can make some great plays, and he can make maybe a bit of a mistake, obviously, as he did against Texas. Chuba Hubbard, of course, one of the best running backs in the country. Wide receiver Tylan Wallace is one of the best receivers in the country as well. And Oklahoma State can beat you running the ball. They can beat you throwing the ball. Their defense ranks first in the Big 12 in regards to scoring per game, although that was hurt when you give up 41 to Texas last week. Their third down defense is very good, Oklahoma State's. So you don't want to get in a third down, a long situation against them based on what's happened so far. And the all-time series between Oklahoma State and K-State, it's tied 8-8 since the Big 12 began back in 1996. Oklahoma State leads the all-time series 40-26, and they usually are close games. I mean, there's been some classics over the years here recently between K-State and Oklahoma State. Last time Manhattan, it was close at halftime, and then K-State pulled away and won 31-12. And 8 of the last 13 games have been decided by a touchdown or less. And certainly I remember Skylar, well, when the K-State was like on their fifth quarterback or something down at Stillwater that one year and found a way to win.
Yeah.
Skylar Thompson got to play, so forth and so on. So there have been some interesting matchups. It is in Manhattan. I think this game, to me, Oklahoma State has the firepower to score a lot of points. I don't think K-State can score a lot of points with Will Howard at quarterback. And that's not a knock on him personally. It's just that, you know, he's green. He's a true freshman. Mm-hmm. And the wide receiving core has not stepped up for this team. I mean, Malik Knowles finally made a catch the other day. Sebastian Taylor the other day had a key play where, you know, he just dropped it. So, you know, the receivers got to help, and I know they might not seeing the ball where they're used to getting it. Timing might be a little bit off yet, but trying to develop that rapport with your quarterback Howard in place of the injured Skylar Thompson. But K-State, I think this is true of this game and about any game they got around the rest of their schedule. But this one in particular, Oklahoma State is explosive offensively. K-State cannot fall behind by 10 or 14 points in this game. Because if they do, I don't see how they're going to come back. I just don't. I think K-State defense is improved, although they had issues against West Virginia. Now, part of that is they're just really thin in the secondary. We really saw that against West Virginia, mm-hmm. and there was some missed tackles. And they struggle against the West Virginia running game at times. Of course, Daigie threw for over 300 yards. K-State defense kind of on their heels. And then the offense has got part of their job is to, you know, allow the defense to rest and stay on the field for a while. Even if you can just flip field position, that would be great. But, you know, K-State just doesn't, you know, if Deuce Vaughn isn't making big plays on offense, they don't really have that big playmaker now, do they? I mean, Malik Knowles could be that guy. Josh Youngblood could have been that
could
guy.
Have been, yeah.
He's no longer with the team. So, you know, it's either Knowles or Vaughn. Am I missing somebody? And Bradley Moore's made some plays, but he's not like a game breaker.
And he's more of a, I mean, he'll make a play every now and then. It might be big, but he's going to be a possession guy, like a big physical guy. But he's athletic still. I'm not going to say he's not, but yeah, that's the list right now. Deuce Vaughn and Malik Knowles can catch the ball.
Mm-hmm.
He can be a big playmaker too. So, you know, Phillip Brooks is a playmaker, but not really necessarily offensively.
Right,
you know, in a special teams game, obviously you've got that, but that's a whole team that has to, you know, set all that up for him to be able to do that too. I mean, it's not just Phillip Brooks doing that. So.
Do you feel that in order for K-State to win this game against Oklahoma State, even though it's in Manhattan, and you won't have that home field advantage because you only got about 11,000 fans there, so it's, I mean, you got somebody there at least, but it's not going to be like it normally would be. So home field advantage is absolutely not as important
it's
as it once was during this, you know, 2020 COVID-19 situation. Don't you get the feeling K-State has to score in either special teams or defense to win
absolutely.
This game? Like, I don't think they can win this game straight up without having a...
Or get a block to set you up
right,
to score.
Yeah,
you
know, right,
like
right.
They did
or a fumble
right.
return to the 10 or an interception return to 30.
Need
right.
to be done in this
there's,
game, right?
To me, there's no way they win this game at the turnover categories even.
Straight up.
Unless
now.
They get a score straight up on defense or special
yeah,
teams.
Yeah, you pick six.
Right, which
two
which,
kickoff returns and a pick six like the KU game.
Well, Oklahoma State's a little better than KU. I just want to throw that out there. I know this is earth-shattering information here. This just in, Oklahoma State, Cowboys, and everybody else in America is better at football than KU, okay? You don't even have to you just say blank team is better than KU. All right. I just think if everything is all equal, let's say both teams go out and don't have a turnover and both teams don't have a kick return or a defensive touchdown. I don't see how K-State wins this game straight up.
Oklahoma State wins it by a couple touchdowns.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. So, you know, it's going to be a tough, tough game.
I was in Stillwater last year and saw that game that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
K-State didn't do anything to take the ball away. Special teams was not. Offense was totally inept. And Chuba Hubbard ran all over him.
What was the final score of that game last year?
I don't even remember what it was. It was closer than it should have been, I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up like maybe 26-10 or something like that.
Okay.
Somewhere in that area. I may be way off, but it was 23-6 at one point.
26-13.
13, okay.
That was the final.
I knew it was 23-6 at one point. Uh-huh. K-State was...
Yeah, it was 23-3 at the end of three.
Yeah.
And I remember that game now because K-State offensively couldn't do anything.
It was nothing.
Couldn't do anything.
We were trying to decide if it was Skyler.
And Hubbard ran for
296. Yeah, and he had like a really long 80s, maybe 90-some yard touchdown. Yeah. I don't even remember what it was. But
right.
I was right in front of me, and I knew at that point that Chuba Hubbard was fast.
Yeah. he's fast.
Holy smokes. Because it was right. At Oklahoma State, I've never been there, but it's you're right basically on the field.
Right.
If you have a good seat, close seat, and you see everything, and it is right there in front of me. It looked like he was like 10 feet away from me, but he was gone, and I'm like, oh, okay.
That guy's fast.
Chuba's good.
Yeah.
Our defense is not. I mean, they missed a gap assignment there, and it made it look a lot easier than it was.
Right.
Well, it was very easy if you miss a gap assignment.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
It made him look better than he was. Maybe I should say that.
No doubt.
But he was still dang good. Still,
but that's the thing. They've got those home run hitters.
Yeah.
Wallace is a really good receiver, and Sanders can make plays with his feet or his arm, and K-State just doesn't have that firepower. But you know what? You think about it. You said the same thing before K-State played Oklahoma and Manhattan last year.
Yeah.
Same thing going into Oklahoma this year. And they won both those games.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think Oklahoma State's defense is better than Oklahoma's defense. But it's going to be a tough game. That's our focus on K-State Athletics today, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. All right, Dusty, we'll end the show with the with election stuff. I know that may sound weird because this is a sports show, but... let's see, I got a text here. Okay. Somebody tells me Bradley Moore is a playmaker. What I'm saying is he's not a game breaker.
Deuce Vaughn.
He's
a playmaker.
Deuce Vaughn is a playmaker. Technically, everybody's a playmaker. I mean, technically, they make a play. But Bradley Moore isn't a guy that I don't think.
Bradley Moore's not going to stretch the field by himself.
Let me rephrase this. When you go into defending K-State, you're not freaking out about Briley Moore. Your number one focus is who?
Deuce Vaughn now.
Exactly. And your second focus is probably...
on a guy that can stretch the field.
Might be
Malik Knowles. But
right.
Haven't been too worried about him because he's not catching much.
Right. Briley Moore, is he a weapon? Yes. Can he make plays? Yes. But is he a guy that really stretches the field?
No, Briley Moore is going to be like a cerebral guy, right? And he's real smart.
Absolutely.
He runs great
routes. He's a nice addition to the team.
He's a guy that will put himself in position to make plays, right?
Right.
Now, you got like a Malik Knowles who's just fast enough, quick enough, athletic enough to get away from somebody, right? But Briley Moore actually has to think about that, focus, get in the position to make the plays. And you got to have somebody to find him, obviously,
too.
And all these things that go into it. But there's nobody's going to try to compare Briley Moore to Deuce Vaughn. I mean, that's what we're saying here.
Yeah, we're talking.
Deuce Vaughn is the only home run hitter on this team right now.
When you defend K-State and you're game planning for K-State, your number one concern is 22.
Yes.
And then maybe your second concern is Briley Moore, but that's a definite way behind Vaughn. I mean, Vaughn's your number one concern. And I'd say if Skylar Thompson's playing, I think your number two concern would be Thompson at times running the football himself. We've seen him have some big games, obviously, against Oklahoma last year. So, you know, when I look at K-State, in fairness to the text that was sent to me about Briley Moore being a playmaker, I could argue against myself on what we said. Malik Knowles isn't a playmaker either.
No.
Not this year.
Right now he's
not this year. So really, honestly, your first playmaker is Vaughn, and your second would be Briley Moore. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's a good point. You know, I think with Will Howard, he's going to get better with each week, I hope. The question is, can he make a big jump week to week? And I think that's really asking a lot of a true freshman.
Yes.
Especially with a receiving core that hasn't been very consistent. You know, if he had a great receiving core, then I would probably say, you know, Will Howard could easily make that big jump from having not a great game against West Virginia to suddenly playing great against Oklahoma State. But I'm just, until the wide receiving corps puts it together, I just can't go there. Can you?
Not at this point, no.
No. So we'll see how it all plays out. But K-State's going to have to, like I said, they're going to have to get some turnovers or get some big play on special teams or defense, like we've talked about before, in order to be a team. I mean, let's be honest. Who has more talent, Oklahoma State or K-State? Wouldn't you say Oklahoma State, at least
it's
on offense?
It's not a question right now.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean Oklahoma State's going to win.
Go on, but that's not right now. Oklahoma State's a more talented team. If you can't see that, there's something you're missing, obviously.
But that doesn't mean that they...
Doesn't mean they're going to go in and win.
Because Oklahoma's lost the last two times against K-State, they clearly have more talent.
K-State has played a lot of teams over the years that have had way more talent.
And what's been the X factor most of those wins? Special teams.
Special teams. I mean, non-offensive touchdowns. Exactly. They lead the country since 1999.
118 or so.
It's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
And so that's how you win games when you don't have the same talent. You find other ways to win.
We had Ian Campbell on the show, I think it was last week, and he said that's the one thing about K-State. He goes, there's so much emphasis on special teams. And he said, because you have to be better in a certain area to even the playing field because, the other team has more talent maybe on offense, or they have more playmakers or more explosive players or even defense. You've got to find a way to even the playing field, and one way to do that is special teams. He's absolutely right.
Yes.
And it's been proven, no doubt. That's the recipe for success for K-State, especially when in games that they're an underdog in. So we'll see. I'm not feeling great about this matchup for K-State, but I never underestimate K-State. If Skylar Thompson was playing this game, I'd feel obviously a lot better. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is. Now, they get Deuce Vaughn. If he can get loose in this game, now all of a sudden things change a little bit. And makes it a lot easier on Will Howard. I mean, let's be honest. If you're a young quarterback, you need a running game. K-State had no running game against West Virginia. No. And on top of that, then they fell behind, and then they almost had to desert it.
Yep.
And that puts all the pressure on a true freshman to throw the football on the road. That's not a recipe for success in college football.
Not even a little bit.
Not even close.